Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! More than 200 Jewish activists and their allies were arrested Monday as they blocked entrances to the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street, one of the largest arrest actions in Wall Street history. They were calling for the U.S. to stop arming Israel. We'll speak to an organizer with Jewish Voice for Peace. This comes as the U.S. is sending an advanced anti-missile defense system and 100 U.S. troops to Israel. We'll speak with a former U.S. Army major who resigned to protest U.S. policy on Gaza. Plus, we look at Donald Trump's threats to deploy soldiers on U.S. soil against what he calls leftists and the enemy within. As the former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, warns Trump is a total fascist, we'll speak to fascism scholar Ruth Ben-Ghiat. Then, union. A new documentary captures the historic campaign by Amazon workers to unionize their warehouse in Staten Island, New York.
And you know that's illegal, right? You're not supposed to be doing that.
This is the long haul, right? This is the marathon.
This is our shot to make things better.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's intensified its ground assault on the northern Gaza Strip, where an estimated 400,000 people remain trapped amidst a dire humanitarian situation. Over the past 24 hours, Israeli attacks have killed at least 55 Palestinians, including 10 people killed by an Israeli tank shell as they lined up for food at a distribution center in Jabalia. Dozens more were wounded in the assault, children among them. On Monday, the World Health Organization began its second round of an emergency polio vaccination campaign after Israel's assault decimated Gaza's water and sanitation infrastructure, prompting a polio outbreak. Parents who brought their children to receive a booster dose said they have much more to fear than the spread of disease.
Today I came to vaccinate my children against polio. We administered the first dose, and now we've administered the second dose, as we are scared of diseases that are widely spread here in Gaza. However, with disease and this fear, we fear the occupation more, because even though we are protecting them and vaccinating them, the occupation is still bombing them.
One of the victims who burned to death after Israel bombed Al-Aqsa Hospital early Monday has been identified as 19-year-old Shaban Al-Dalou. He was an engineering student at Gaza's Al-Azhar University, who just started his studies in September of last year. He'd built the tent shelter his family was living in when Israel bombed them. At least four others were also killed in the fire. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed two Palestinians, including a child, and injured four others during an hours-long assault Monday on the city of Jenin and its refugee camp. 23-year-old Mahmoud Mamoun Abu Al-Rab died of gunshot wounds, as did 17-year-old Rayan Ibrahim Al-Sayed. Their killings bring the death toll from Israeli assaults on the West Bank over the past year to 755, including 165 children. In Lebanon, at least 21 people were killed Monday when Israel bombed a four-story apartment building in the northern village of Etu. The UN Human Rights Commission reports 12 women and two children were among the victims. On Monday, a top UNICEF official warned of a lost generation of children in Lebanon, with some 400,000 youths among the estimated 1.2 million displaced by Israel's bombs. This is Jalal Ferhat, a 40-year-old father of five whose family crossed Lebanon's border into Syria Monday seeking refuge.
There are strikes in our neighborhood and destruction, and they struck near my house. I have children. You can't just stay where you are. We tried going to another place. We moved from Baalbek, where they struck near my house. We had to leave again. I have children. You can't stay. We are going to Syria because it could be safer than where we are.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu doubled down Monday in his warnings to the UN interim force in Lebanon, known as UNIFIL, telling UN peacekeepers to, quote, heed Israel's request and to temporarily get out of harm's way, unquote.
The charge that Israel deliberately attacked UNIFIL personnel is completely false. It's exactly the opposite. Israel repeatedly asked UNIFIL to get out of harm's way.
Netanyahu's remarks came after Israeli troops fired on a UNIFIL watchtower and destroyed part of a UNIFIL base near the Israeli border. At least five UNIFIL peacekeepers have been injured by Israel's assaults. Despite the repeated attacks, UNIFIL's chief has said peacekeepers will remain in their positions. On Monday, Britain, France, Germany, and Italy issued a joint statement calling Israel's attacks on UN peacekeepers a violation of international law. And the EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, condemned Israel's attacks on UNIFIL as unacceptable.
The 27 members agreed on asking Israel to stop attacking UNIFIL. Many European members are participating in this mission. Their work is very important. It's completely unacceptable attacking United Nations troops.
The Guardian is reporting USAID officials have been holding regular meetings with Israeli counterparts at Israel's notorious Deir Taman prison since late July, after the Israeli agency overseeing aid relocated to the military base. Deir Taman has been labeled a torture camp, where Palestinians abducted by Israeli soldiers in Gaza have described harrowing physical, sexual, and psychological abuse. The Guardian says it's not clear if the USAID workers have observed the part of the base that is used as a torture camp, but affected officials told the newspaper, quote, I can't sleep at night knowing that it's going on, unquote, and that Israel's relocation of its aid coordination group to the prison, quote, seems like trolling, unquote. You can see our past coverage of Deir Taman and the reports on it at democracynow.org. Here in New York City, hundreds of Jewish activists and their allies rallied outside the New York Stock Exchange Monday, demanding an Israeli arms embargo and an end to war profiteering by companies like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. Police forcibly removed peaceful protesters as they blocked the entrance to the Stock Exchange, arresting over 200 people in one of the largest mass arrests outside the Stock Exchange in history. After headlines, we'll speak with Elena Stein, director of organizing and strategy for Jewish Voice for Peace. She was detained at Monday's action. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., activists with Code Pink disrupted an annual conference at the Association of the U.S. Army.
The blood of hundreds of thousands of people is under your hand. Your pocket steeped in the blood of Palestinians, of people in the global south, from the Philippines to the Congo to Haiti. We have 800 military bases.
Everyone, if you can just
better than you talk about, we have no future. You're making a killing off of killing.
Canada has expelled six Indian diplomats amidst mounting tensions over the murder last year of a Sikh separatist leader in British Columbia. India responded by announcing it's also expelling six Canadian diplomats this week. New Delhi's rejected Canadian accusations that Indian government agents were involved in the killing of Hardeep Singh Nijjar and the targeting of other Indian dissidents in Canada. This is Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
Canada is a country rooted in the rule of law, and the protection of our citizens is paramount. That's why when our law enforcement and intelligence officials began pursuing credible allegations that agents of the government of India were directly involved in the killing of a Canadian citizen, Hardeep Singh Nijjar, on Canadian soil, we responded.
And in North Carolina, the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department has arrested a man who allegedly used an assault rifle to threaten workers helping with relief efforts from Hurricane Helene. Investigators charge 44-year-old William Jacob Parsons with the crime of going armed to the terror of the public, a misdemeanor. The incident and other cases of threats and harassment against federal workers prompted FEMA to briefly suspend some of its North Carolina relief operations. FEMA pulled back its workers from going door to door in areas hard hit by hurricane damage. This comes after Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance spent weeks spreading lies and conspiracy theories about FEMA, falsely claiming the agency sent aid meant for hurricane victims to migrants while withholding aid to people in Republican areas. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan, and happy birthday.
Hi, Amy. Thank you, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The Washington Post is reporting Israel's planning to launch retaliatory strikes against Iran within the next 3 weeks ahead of the U.S. election. Iran fired nearly 200 ballistic missiles at Israeli military and security sites on October 1st. At the time, Iran said the strikes were retaliation for the assassination of Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh, who was killed in an explosion in Tehran in July on the day of the inauguration of the new Iranian president. According to the new report in The Washington Post, Israel's now considering striking military sites inside Iran, but not Iran's oil or nuclear facilities. This comes as the Biden administration is sending an advanced anti-missile defense system and 100 U.S. troops to Israel in advance of Israel's attack on Iran. In a statement, a Pentagon spokesperson said, quote, "This action underscores the United States' ironclad commitment to the defense of Israel and to defend Americans in Israel from any further ballistic missile attacks by Iran," unquote. The missile defense system is known as THAAD, Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. Over the past year, the U.S. has sent over 50,000 tons of armaments and military equipment to Israel, but this marks the first significant deployment of U.S. troops to Israel over the past year. A new study by the Cost of War Project at Brown University estimates the U.S. has spent nearly $23 billion on the Israeli military and related operations over the past year. We're joined now by Harrison Mann, a former U.S. Army major who worked at the DIA. That's the Defense Intelligence Agency. Mann, who is Jewish, resigned to protest U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. He's now a senior fellow at Win Without War, a network of activists and organizations working for a more peaceful, progressive U.S. foreign policy. Harrison Mann, welcome back to Democracy Now! If you can talk about the significance of what the U.S. is doing right now, sending the THAAD missiles and the 100 U.S. troops.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. This deployment, I think, sends a very strong message, unfortunately, to the Netanyahu government, which is that if you continue to escalate with Iran, you will be rewarded with the protection of additional U.S. systems and troops. And it also, unfortunately, sends the message that, you know, we've seen the people burning in tents And we've seen you publicly muse about starving everybody in northern Gaza to death, and that's not a deal breaker. In terms of the capability that this provides, the radar that this system depends on, the ANPTY-2, has actually already been located in southern Israel since 2008, operated by U.S. troops. So that detection capability is already there. We're now sending a battery that has about 6 launchers with a total of 48 interceptors. And the reason that I want to mention that number is really all that we've added materially is the ability to shoot down another 48 ballistic missiles if Iran adds them to a barrage. So I see this in many ways as a symbolic show of support that can be easily neutralized if Iran just fires more missiles next time. And then the other issue here is that we are indisputably putting more U.S. troops at risk by sending them to Israel. They're going to be operating out of Israeli military installations. And we've seen, both with the October 1 Iranian attack and then more recent Hezbollah attacks, that Israel's adversaries can penetrate its air defenses and can strike targets within Israeli bases. So we have to be very clear that these troops are entering a combat zone. They are going to be at risk, especially as escalation continues. And unfortunately, they've been sent there, I think, with no consultation with Congress, with no clear legal justification, without the argument that they are needed to go there for urgent self-defense needs.
And Harrison Manning, I wanted to follow up specifically on that issue. Is it your sense that to send troops like this into an existing war, in effect, combat, that what the requirements are in terms of Congress's approval?
Yeah. To introduce troops into hostilities per the 1973 War Powers Act, you either need an authorization from Congress or there needs to be some urgent and imminent self-defense threat. In this case, the supposed self-defense threat is an Iranian missile attack. But the irony here is the Iranian missile attack is only going to happen if we help Israel strike Iran first.
And I also wanted to ask you about a report in the New York Times, a front page article, the lead article in the New York Times today, which talks about the Israel's use of Palestinian detainees as human shields in Gaza, forcing the detainees to, according to the New York Times, to go into tunnels in case they were booby-trapped ahead of Israeli troops, in essence using them as potential victims in order to protect Israeli troops.
Yeah, so this is based off the reporting and investigations from a Israeli group called Breaking the Silence. I had the honor of meeting their CEO, Nadav Weinman, when he was in D.C. a couple months ago, and he told me about this very project and his efforts to document this process. So I can say it is very real. It's unfortunately a systemic practice by Israeli troops, kidnapping Palestinians, sometimes putting GoPros on them, putting Israeli uniforms on them. So if they go up to an enemy position, they're going to look like Israeli soldiers. And at this point, this is kind of the least offensive and illegal thing that we have the Israeli Defense Forces doing in this conflict. So again, going back to the THAAD deployment, I wish we were not reinforcing and encouraging this behavior as the U.S. government.
What is your sense, Harrison Mann, of why President Biden is doing this? He is not a it is not as if he embraces Netanyahu, though certainly in terms of sending weapons, he has done that to the fullest. He recognizes he is clearly a Trump ally. Clearly, Netanyahu wants Trump to win. Trump is former president of the United States, who could face prison if he doesn't win. And Prime Minister Netanyahu could face prison if he is no longer prime minister. Their fates are intertwined. So why is Biden embracing him in this way?
Yeah, the administration for the past year has adhered to this bear hug strategy, the idea being that We have to keep giving Israel support and protection, and that's the only way we can get them to listen to us. I think it's obvious that that has not worked. The thinking right now is that by offering this system to Israel's defense, we can at least convince them to avoid striking more sensitive targets in Iran, like nuclear facilities or oil infrastructure. And, you know, that might actually succeed in the short term, but we have to understand once these troops and this system is deployed in Israel, I don't know what incentive Netanyahu has to continue keeping his word and not keep escalating. And if you're asking why would we keep supporting, or why would the president keep supporting Netanyahu even when he knows that he'd rather have a Republican president, Donald Trump, in office, I think they just can't imagine another strategy. And it's really unfortunate to see that this administration, and to a certain extent, the Harris campaign, would rather risk her election than distance themselves from Israel and from the genocide.
And what is your sense of how, the impact of this recent decision to deploy these batteries to Israel? That the impact that's going to have on Iran or other enemies of Israel in the region?
Yeah, so in the near term, I don't think it's going to have a big impact because Iran knows where these troops will be deployed. And if it responds to Israel's next strike, it can probably successfully avoid hitting them or avoid hitting near them. Unfortunately, as the escalation continues, and if we move beyond symbolic messaging strikes to an actual war of annihilation, these troops are going to become targets, even if it's by accident, right? They probably have a survivability plan. That means they displace to another location in a combat situation. So we're going to get to a point where even if they want to avoid killing Americans, Iran and Hezbollah may do so by accident. And then the other side of this is that Israel now has its own sort of American human shields that it can leverage to try and avoid a certain level of attacks from Iran, knowing that Iran does not want to kill Americans. And it knows it's got a new mechanism to drag America directly into a war with either Hezbollah or Iran, since now it's much more likely that U.S. troops can be killed on Israeli soil.
I want to ask you something that's not exactly in your wheelhouse, but I'm just curious what you think as a former official at the Defense Intelligence Agency about Donald Trump calling for the National Guard or the U.S. military to be deployed on U.S. soil to target what he called radical left lunatics. Trump made the call during an interview on Fox News. This is what he said.
I think the bigger problem are the people from within. We have some very bad people. We have some sick people, radical left lunatics. And I think they're and it should be very easily handled by, if necessary, by National Guard, or if really necessary, by the military, because they can't let that happen.
Your response, Harrison Mann.
Yeah, I'll just say, as somebody who's had friends and colleagues who were deployed to D.C. in 2020 or have been deployed on the border mission, I trust, you know, the non-commissioned officers and officers in the Army, in the National Guard, to not be, you know, aggressive against political activity. But I think the danger here is that if you do this deployment, which units might not refuse, you're then in a situation with really unclear guidance about what you're supposed to do with protesters or what you're supposed to do with whatever group the president has told you to target. So I think, fortunately, our forces know the right thing to do, but when they end up in a situation with very unclear or maybe contradictory guidance between what the president is saying publicly and their own commanders are telling them, you have the risk of unintentional violence or uncontrolled violence.
And finally, Harrison Mann, we are just going into a segment on one of the largest arrest actions outside the New York Stock Exchange. Over 200 Jewish activists and their allies were arrested, calling for the U.S. to stop arming Israel. As a former U.S. Army major who resigned to protest U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. As a Jewish American, your thoughts? And also how activists on the outside in the streets, I often think about Dan Ellsberg when I think of this, you know, who is at the Pentagon and the RAND Corporation, and talked about seeing those protesters outside. You're on the inside. What does this mean? You're out now, but many of your colleagues are still in. When they see these kind of mass actions?
Yeah, first, I appreciate that you mentioned that I'm Jewish, too. And with respect to these protesters and my own advocacy, I think it's incredibly important for American Jews to talk about this, especially to demonstrate that Israeli Zionism is not the same as Judaism, and the actions of the Israeli state do not represent all Jews and certainly don't represent American Jews, because unfortunately that's a claim that both Israeli politicians and American politicians like to make, which is that if you care about Jews, you have to support what Israel is doing in Gaza, West Bank, and Lebanon right now, and that's just patently untrue. And then I can tell you both myself and some of the other officials who publicly resigned, we were influenced and affected by protest activity that we saw. In our case, in terms of the timing, the student protests were extremely affecting in feeling like, I'll just speak for myself, that I could no longer justify staying silent when we had 19-year-olds going to get beat up and risk their futures for this cause. So I can't promise that this is going to fix everything, but the people on the inside of our institutions do, in aggregate, notice this activism.
Harrison Mann, I want to thank you for being with us, a former U.S. Army major, a Jewish American who resigned to protest U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. He's now a senior fellow at Win Without War, a network of activists and organizations working for a more peaceful, progressive U.S. foreign policy. When we come back, we'll be joined by one of those activists outside the New York Stock Exchange, believed to be one of the largest mass arrests there in U.S. history. She was arrested. She's with Jewish Voice for Peace. Stay with us. I'm a bit of a man. Afraid of Americans by David Bowie. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Protests over the U.S. arming Israel are continuing. On Monday morning, more than 200 Jewish activists and their allies were arrested as they blocked entrances to the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street. The protesters were calling for an Israeli arms embargo, an end to war profiteering by companies like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. Protest was organized by Jewish Voice for Peace, which said the action was the largest act of civil disobedience in history outside the New York Stock Exchange. Participants in the protests included descendants of Holocaust survivors, as well as Emmy Award-winning comedian Eric Andre, Academy Award-winning filmmaker Laura Poitras, the acclaimed artist Nan Golden, the Oscar-nominated actress Deborah Winger, and the artist Molly Crabapple. Police forcibly remove many of the peaceful protesters, including our next guest, Elena Stein. She's director of organizing and strategy for Jewish Voice for Peace. She was arrested, held for 8 hours. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us, Elena. There's a very dramatic picture of you being taken out, held, carried by police on your back. You're wearing the T-shirt you're wearing right now, Stop Arming Israel. Explain what this action was all about.
First of all, thank you so much for having me, Amy and Juan. I've been watching Democracy Now! Every morning for about 15 years, so appreciate everything you all do. Yesterday, 500 Jewish New Yorkers and friends shut down business as usual at the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street, demanding, the epicenter of global capital, demanding that the U.S. stop arming Israel and stop profiting from genocide. And, as we arrived in the morning, we were learning the news that just that night, Israel had bombed the Al-Aqsa hospital and had set at least 30 tents ablaze full of people who had already been displaced, who still had IVs in their arms from being at the hospital, burning people alive.